Welcome everyone to the next Bioinformatics podcast, where we discuss the latest advancements at the intersection of biology and informatics and celebrate the brilliant people and companies that are changing the world through advancements in genomics and life sciences. Our first guest on the next podcast is Phil Ewells. He's a lead for bioinformatics development for the National Genomics Infrastructure as part of SciLife Lab in Stockholm, Sweden. He's the author of MultiQC, and he's the co-creator of the NF-Core project. Welcome, Phil.
Hi, nice to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. First broadcast as well. So SciLife Lab, Science for Life Laboratory, is an institution for the advancement of molecular biosciences in Sweden, and it's funded as a national research infrastructure project by the Swedish government. Their vision is for Sweden to be a world-leading nation in life science infrastructure. So let's start off with a little bit of context around you, Phil, how you made your way into the wonderful world of bioinformatics and find yourself at SciLife Lab.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess as you can probably tell from my accent, I'm from the UK originally, so a pretty traditional academic kind of career path that, for the start at least. I did a PhD in the lab actually, working with epigenetics in Cambridge in the UK, working at the Babram Institute, kind of always had a bit of an interest in computers and coding and kind of been doing website design as a hobby for years when I was a teenager. And sometime during my PhD, I kind of started getting into this like sequencing data from the old Illumina GA2X sequences, which were brand new at the time, and realized that stuff I'd been doing for fun in my spare time was actually quite transferable, and started to code for biology instead, and realized that was what I wanted to do.
Everybody follows a kind of winding road into their career, don't they? I started in engineering and physics and ended up in computer science.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you never really know what you're going to enjoy until you start doing it, I guess, by accident.
Exactly. So you've been involved in some really cool projects. I hear a lot about MultiQC and NF-Core, of course. So tell us about some of the open source stuff you've been involved in and what's going on there.
Yeah. Again, that's my kind of historical accident, really. When I started working with bioinformatics in Cambridge, the guys at Babram have got a real strong streak for open source software. I was working in the same group as Simon Andrews, who wrote FastQC, which is probably one of the most commonly run bioinformatics tools there is, certainly in genomics. Bismarck by Felix Kruger is another one for very commonly used in methylation. There's Hiccup for HiSeq data. So those guys were around me were already in the business of writing open source software, and I loved it. So I kind of got involved straight away and started powering out my own projects. Simple, small stuff at first. I actually wrote my own workflow manager back in the day called ClusterFlow, back when kind of this was starting to become a problem to manage these workflows and kind of progress through. And I've never really set out with that as the aim for what I've been doing. I've just had a problem in front of me, needed to solve it. And whenever I end up writing some scripts to do stuff, I try and package it as a tool which other people can use. And sometimes people never find those tools, and they just quietly die in obscurity. And sometimes I accidentally hit a niche, and that's definitely what happened in MultiQC. That was just meant to be an internal reporting tool for us, and now it's used by people all over the world. With NF-Core, it's slightly more explicit, but the precursor to NF-Core, our pipelines, again, we were just writing for ourselves, and it became clear that it was something that would be more widely usable for the scientific community. And I love that feeling of being able to kind of write something for myself but it be useful for others as well.
I guess that makes sense. It's useful things for you tend to take off. That's the way a lot of projects start. But tell us more about NF-Core. It's really starting to take off in its own right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's certainly the most explosive project to date that I've been part of. It's just jumped from strength to strength when it started. We only started it in 2018, I think. So it's not been around for very long. But I mean, depending on how you count the community, we're kind of numbered in the thousands now, certainly in hundreds of contributors, which is amazing. It's really taken on a life of its own, which is great. But anyway, so the background for NF-Core, for anyone listening who's not familiar, it kind of came out of us working with Nextflow and with Nextflow pipelines. And internally, we started kind of coming up with style guidelines and templates to, as we were making lots of pipelines, and again, thought that this would be generally interesting. And because Nextflow is really the first workflow manager tool that I'd been in touch with, which was truly portable between different infrastructures, different compute systems, it kind of seemed crazy that everyone was in their own research institutes building their own pipelines to do essentially the same things. So together with some people I met at the Nextflow conference, actually, the Nextflow hackathon, primarily Alex Peltzer in Tübingen in Germany at Cubic, we kind of sat down and talked about this and how we could work together, and stripped off all the institutional branding we had from the pipelines we were already working on, branded it as NF Core instead, and tried to open it up as much as possible. So now we're like this community of people all working together on the same set of pipelines, which are used all over the world, and it's brilliant. I think we've got.
I guess that's why it's gained so much momentum. It's just got it's got so much utility for all these different people using the same pipelines, and it just seems to have taken off. Like you said, there's thousands of users and what, a couple hundred companies involved. It's incredible.
Yeah, I think when we were first kind of starting it, I was trying to keep it a quite stealthy rollout at the start while we were ironing out the bugs. And then Paolo, the main developer behind Nextflow, tweeted about it. And suddenly we had this kind of jump of interested people. And I was like, well, we're not ready yet. But that was a really good learning lesson, because time and again, it's not just me. It's not just any, you can't put a finger on anyone within NF Core that's key to its success. It's the whole community as a whole, which is responsible. And that's really fun to be part of, it's just stuff happening all over the place.
Doubt. Every Nextflow customer I talk to now is, grabbing something, RNA-seq or something from NF Core and using it. So that's fantastic. It saves them a lot of time to get up and running and going through the same trial and error that everybody else has gone through before them. Absolutely. So let's shift gears. We've seen a lot of breakthroughs in bioinformatics in the last few years, and a lot of infrastructure technology has emerged and changed to help you achieve your work. What do you see as the technical challenges for bioinformaticians today, Phil?
Sure. I mean, it depends. It depends what you're doing with your bioinformatics. But I think certainly as we're moving into this kind of era of biology, which is more and more high throughput, we've been saying this for years, but the exponential growth keeps growing. I think this kind of the coordination aspect is what I work with, so I'm biased, but the coordination of these large scale analyses, keeping track of all your data, and it's just such a big thing that you can't possibly keep everything in your head at once. So kind of that coordination of large scale analysis and all the data management, I think, is one of the key things, which is new, which is particularly difficult technically.
Right. Yeah, the data management, I mean, I hear about that in my prior years in HPC in the cloud, where data management's still the challenge, and we're hearing about it now with genomics, and we hear about it all the time with machine learning as well. So, we're seeing more and more machine learning being applied in life sciences. How do you see other new technologies being applied to bioinformatics, and sort of where do you see opportunities down the road to sort of change what we're doing and what technologies might come into play?
Yeah, machine learning is really exciting. I mean, I don't do so much myself with it, but I think we're starting to see new possibilities being opened up with it. It's kind of its own new field. Tools like Deep Variant coming out, which are kind of like proof of principle, but now also more and more tools coming out, which wouldn't really work in any other way. So I think that's really cool. But in terms of other technologies, I mean, certainly there's lots of scope for kind of, I guess you can use ML for optimization of things a lot, like kind of learning from common processes and trying to synthesize all that data. But and then just more generally, I think it's really exciting to see a lot of this kind of new customization coming out and using new technologies, like actually making use of GPU processes, kind of more specialized hardware, things like this, which it was fairly unthinkable not that long ago when we were kind of smaller players. But as bioinformatics scales, all these things are coming into play and making some radical changes, which is fun.
Exactly. Yeah, I've spoken to a lot of people about the differences between research software engineers and bioinformaticians, and certainly we're at the annex of that here in this podcast. But how do you think about those differences in the disparate skill sets that are needed for this kinds of research?
Yeah, we've got a job advert at the moment and open, and like I called it bioinformatician. We're joking about it on Twitter because I'm kind of saying, what does bioinformatician mean? One day one day you're deploying a cluster and you're a systems admin, the next day you're doing an analysis project for a research group and you're a data analyst, it's a bit of a kind of catch-all term. But I mean, I said in the introduction, I started off in the wet lab. I consider myself a biologist who learned to code, and I sit next to people who are kind of, trained computer engineers who've learned the biology, and there's this nice kind of melting pot in the middle where everyone's had to learn something to get to where they are, and it's quite difficult to find anyone who's an expert in everything. And so I think you have to pick the tasks that you're most interested in, and when you're building a team with bioinformaticians, you need to try and make sure that you have kind of people who specialize in all the different fields you need, which is quite broad.
Yeah, and I guess it's challenging too, not just to define the role, but to find the people. We're seeing so many ads for bioinformaticians and seeing Nextflow and all kinds of different ads. I looked the other day and there were 130 advertisements that mentioned Nextflow. So it's a challenge to hire people, I'm sure, these days. Tell us, SI Life Lab, what techniques are you championing there?
Yeah, I mean, computationally, of course, we've always got NF Core, I try and make as much noise about it as possible. But I mean, we're not just bioinformatics. Obviously, the National Genomics Infrastructure, where I work, we push a lot of new stuff in the lab as well. The big one at the moment for us, which is really exciting, is spatial transcriptomics and spatial technologies, kind of this concept of being able to combine optical microscopy data with genomics, basically. And so taking an RNA-seq data set, but knowing where in this tissue slice all these different transcripts came from, which is just so exciting. It's so visual. It's really nice. We've got a big nanopore PromethION machine coming in for us soon. So we're really excited about long read sequencing and nanopore, but also we have PacBio and all the different applications. We've been the kind of big players for doing de novo genome assembly. It's a bit of a soft spot of ours for a while. And we've been doing that with other technologies like mate pair sequencing and stuff on Illumina in the past. But now we've got these fantastic long read assemblies coming out, and we're pairing that with things like Hi-C. And we're starting to kind of just go to chromosome level perfect assemblies in kind of one sweep, which is just amazing. A lot of exciting techniques going on.
That is amazing. Blows me away what's going on in our industry. It's very cool. Okay, that's great, Phil. I learned a lot and had some fun, but I wanted to move into my favorite part of the podcast, or what I hope will be the favorite part. It is the first one, so we'll see. But this is the rapid fire section where I ask you a quick question and you give me your immediate thoughts in kind of 60 seconds or less. So let's start it out with, what is your favorite book and why?
Well, yeah, favorite book is tough. Probably something uninspired, like Lord of the Rings, classic. I'm reading two good books at the moment, actually. What's it called? The Prisoners of Geography is really good. It was written, the version I've got is 3 years old, and it's all about geopolitics, and it makes some really amazing predictions, which have already come true by the time I'm reading it. So that's really cool. And I've got another one as well, which is a bit more niche, The Hidden Life of Trees. It's all about trees. It's great.
Thanks, Phil. That book, Prisoners of Geography, sounds interesting. I'm definitely going to check that one out. I'll make a note right now. So what do you think the next 5 years look like for NF Core?
Just bigger and better, hopefully. I mean, the community shows no signs of slowing down. So my hope is we continue to grow. It's really exciting to see us start to branch beyond just genomics now, starting to get more proteomics pipelines and all kinds of other fields. The more people, the problem we're solving with standardization and these technologies applies to any field, really. So it's really nice to try and broaden that out. So I hope in 5 years we'll be all over science.
As a UK transplant in Sweden, what is your favorite Swedish food?
So I'm a vegetarian, so I can't say meatballs, I'm afraid. But some of the pastries and some of the sweet things here are fantastic. Just coming up to Easter now, we're starting to see a Swedish delicacy called a semla, which is just so good. It's like a little bread roll with cream and almond paste inside, and it's delicious. So So, yeah.
That sounds good and low calorie. I think Swedish meatballs are the hit over here when you go to IKEA here in Canada. So I'm in Canada, as I just said. What food do you think of when you think of Canada? And everybody gives the same answer here.
Is it going to be maple syrup?
Yeah, pretty much. It's like that's the only thing we have or eat here. I think everyone thinks of that. That's cool. How do you feel about the future of remote work with respect to bioinformatics teams?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's been a really interesting year, of course, for a lot of reasons. But I mean, personally, I basically haven't been into work physically since March last year, I guess. In fact, it was the NF Core Hackathon in London. That was like the last time I went into work, was just before that. Of course, for many people working in bioinformatics, I don't think it makes a huge amount of difference to be working from home, really. I don't think our productivity has dropped all that much. And I'm, like most people, pretty happy working from home, I think. But still do definitely miss some of the social aspects of work. So I think I personally would hope that at least a partial work from home attitude going forward in the future will be a bit less stigmatized.
Yeah, sure. That makes a lot of sense. I think we're seeing lots of productivity in computer science as well, where people, you know, have traditionally been working from home. And I guess the dry lab, the wet lab, it doesn't work so well being at home. No. What advice do you have for bioinformaticians out there listening who are looking to enter into the field? Or maybe even their biologists or computer sciences that want to make that transition into the other area?
Yeah, just find something a problem you want to solve and get involved in the open source communities, because it's a great way to learn and a great way you learn. Effectively, at the end of the day, the way that most people learn is from other people and from kind of really getting into code. And that's the way I learned to write Python. It was by having my pull requests pulled apart by colleagues. So especially with bioinformatics, it's not uncommon to be feel quite isolated if you're one of only a small number of people or by yourself in a group working with this kind of stuff. So joining a community like NFCore, of course, or any other open source project is a great way to kind of get involved with it, get mentoring from other people and kind of, yeah, up your skill set, I guess.
Well, that wraps us up, Phil. Thanks a lot. I had a lot of fun with this, the inaugural broadcast. I really enjoyed speaking with you and learned a lot. So we'll see you in the travels. And thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.